Would he be better at Manchester United than Solskjaer?
Well, I'm only giving you my opinion. I believe so.
Subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast stream wherever you get your podcasts and download the OTB Sports app.
We would love to hear from you this morning. You can tweet us at Off the Ball, or you can comment on the YouTube stream if that is where you're watching, and we would love to get your thoughts on the performance rankings.
You know, that wasn't an All-Ireland winning performance.
Probably should have won the game based on the second half performance.
Is it a step too far to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
OTBAN's performance rankings with Gillette.
I'm scratching my head. That performance was just lacked that intensity.
Every Monday morning on OTBAM, we're looking for your suggestions around the performance rankings. Enter and you will be in with a chance to win a Gillette starter pack. We'll pick out the winner before 9:30 this morning, and you can tweet us at Off the Ball. You can comment on our Instagram stories, and you can WhatsApp us as well. 087 9180 180, 087 9180 180. So any of your suggestions that are either in these five or outside of these five, we would warmly welcome. Let's have a look at what is on the colour scale today. So the bad, the good, the grand. So Galway football is in the bad here. We've kind of touched on this already, Ger, but is it like, do Galway in a weird way almost have learned experience of how to be so bad in a league game and then turn it around in a few weeks' time? Like, it's just, because like we can't say for sure this is their season gone. It was just so astonishingly bad. It was worse than the Mayo performance last year in many ways, with such quality in the squad. Like, I thought that as a result of what happened last year in the league, they would have been much better primed for the weekend, because maybe they felt that, sure, they closed the gap on Mayo when it came to the championship, but maybe that 1-point defeat becomes a draw game or an narrow win for Galway. Had they won the league game, had there been that little bit of a psychological boost of beating Mayo, or just not getting hammered by Mayo. So I can't see a world in which Galway would deliberately underprepare or deliberately try to be cute about this year's league. Like, it's a tough division. They're in with Kerry and Dublin. They don't want to get relegated. There's no benefit to what happened last weekend. So, I'm just putting this down as a horrific performance, which is not to say that they're not going to bounce back. But I'm astonished, especially after listening to Michael Meehan on the show last week, when the sounds were pretty positive around this football team.
The sounds were really positive. And the sounds were really positive on the Andy Moore and Paddy Andrews football pod as well. Like, there was a sense that there was a bunch of new young players coming through, that they had some returning players, particularly around the midfield area, who were going to help. And there was no evidence of that in the game against Kerry at the weekend. You would say that of all the years, I don't think teams care about getting relegated this year in many ways, because who knows what the format is going to actually be next year. And if you're a management team who is facing down the barrel of a competitive provincial championship and a pathway to an All-Ireland semi-final where you've got to be tuned in from the very second that championship starts, then I think that if you're Galway, the point you made earlier on, challenge matches, this is a challenge match for them. And so therefore, getting hockey in a game like this is probably less relevant. Like, would they, if they were in the championship against Kerry, allow Clifford to be given the freedom of the pitch the way he was? Would they not have put some defensive structure in place? So that's the one thing that makes me think that this is less relevant from a Galway perspective in the long run than we might, you know. This is overreaction Monday. We're allowed to overreact to stuff because we have so little evidence available to us. You know, first game out, I think that it's pretty easy for us to overreact to it. If they get hockeys again in the league, I don't think it really matters, because I think that management team in particular, very smart, like really understand defensive structures as well. You know, I know that the Let's Restore Galway to their swashbuckling best was kind of the ticket on which Pádraig Joyce was elected manager. But, you know, Dively, for example, very, very smart football man, fully understands how a defence is supposed to function and what role the stopper is supposed to have and what role the creator is supposed to have. And thinking about it, I think that the best point that you made so far was that point when we were talking at the top of the show about this is what happens in matches that we never get to see. But all of a sudden, some teams are going to be treating this as an opportunity. If you're Dublin, for example, you need to hit the ground running here because you won't have a meaningful game until the All-Ireland semi-final. If you're Galway, you need to taper up to a point where, over the course of the Connacht Championship, you're peaking for those big games. And so I can see how they're in the red, though. And I can see how, if you're a Galway supporter, you're like, so we conceded 323 against Mayo in the league last year. It's a lot of goals that we're shipping. How do we stop that?
Yeah, like that is why they're in the red, is that they do have such a talented management team, it seems, and such a talented group of players, that this was a massive underperformance. And you don't need to be trying to keep your cards close to your chest to put in place a defensive system that might stop you from leaking 10 proper goal chances, because you actually might not be able to go as far as describing Kerry as clinical on Saturday. That is the really worrying thing for Galway, that I'm telling you, Dublin would have scored more goals, much more goals on Saturday, which is the remarkable thing. We're going to come back to this in just a moment. We should touch on Chelsea here, who are also in the red this morning, hammered 4-0 yesterday in the Champions League final. They were down 4-0 by the 36th minute. So this capped off a terrible, terrible weekend for Chelsea in both men's and women's football, where all of a sudden, Ger, it's looking like, could Chelsea bottle this conclusion to the season to the point where they don't qualify for next season's Champions League, they don't win the Champions League, they don't win the FA Cup, and Thomas Tuchel almost kind of has to start all over again next season with a bunch of players who will look as if they're not good enough going into this summer's transfer window?
It'd be really interesting if they did bottle everything, wouldn't it? Because the bit where we were anointing Tuchel, and we were guilty of it, where we were anointing Tuchel the next super manager and Chelsea automatic contenders next season, that can go a bit pear-shaped really quickly over the next 2 weeks. I mean, over the next 36 hours, if Leicester beat them again, and Leicester therefore would essentially be qualified and home and hosed for the Champions League, how will we feel about what Tuchel has done? I mean, I think he's done an excellent job to improve the side from when Lampard was there, and he has not picked any of these players. He has not helped to shape the squad, and maybe he doesn't want to play with 36-year-old centre-back. And maybe he doesn't feel like that's the best way for him to build a league-winning side and a Champions League-winning side. But it was a weird performance from Chelsea against Leicester at the weekend. It wasn't that swashbuckling performance that we've seen. It was like Leicester had worked them out. And it was, I mean, I think Brendan Rodgers was absolutely sensational and has been sensational since the moment he arrived at Leicester. And just because he tells everybody he's sensational, that doesn't mean he isn't sensational. And I don't know, really interesting game, really interesting sequence of matches now at the end of a Premier League season where we've known who the winners have been essentially since, I don't know, halfway through that 15-game winning run that Man City had. So hats off to Leicester, and squeaky butt time for Chelsea.
And a terrible jersey as well to make everything way worse. Like, this was almost like what Chelsea did to Manchester City in the FA Cup semi-final. Leicester kind of did a similar job to them, but it just felt totally different. It felt like this was not football as we have come to know it. This was something different. This was an event. Like, I'm not sure. I think I found myself like drifting towards my phone quite a lot this season because the life of the game just has not existed without fans. And all of a sudden, Saturday felt like the most important sporting event in the world, the FA Cup of all things, involving Chelsea, who really are not necessarily a club that too many neutrals care too much about. I was absolutely rooting against them with every passing moment because of the fact that there was this massive energy inside Wembley Stadium. It was an amazing TV event.
It was incredible. Absolutely incredible. I think the VAR decision in the video that's doing the rounds of the Chelsea fans filming themselves as they celebrate the equaliser. You know, how ironic the comic book film was going to end up being Chilwell from a Leicester City fans perspective. And the happiness. And then all of a sudden, this dread silence falls over them and you just hear expletives being shouted as VAR scratches off the goal for an offside, which, you know, looks pretty marginal. And when do you stop the video? Do you stop it after the ball leaves the foot, or is it like when he makes contact with it, or is those frames? I don't know. VAR is like not great, right? And we'll get into this with the hurling conversation a little bit later on as well. But having the fans there completely transformed that game. Like, I I'm not going to lie, I watched most of the Villa game on the highlights, and the lack of celebration when they equalised at one stage was like, this definitely feels like a training ground match. This definitely feels like a challenge match compared with the previous day when there were fans, and the difference it's going to make to all these teams. Like, this has absolutely been a year of phony war, and how grateful we were that there was that phony war. But now that we see what the difference fans make, the fleshy jiggle of the fans in the stands, It's the greatest sight in world sports.
Yeah, like I want to live my life with the confidence that Ben Chilwell had to celebrate his former team, against his former team, knowing that he was on the offside line and the fact that it was an own goal. To have that confidence to actually go all out and celebrate that, thinking that there was going to be no repercussions or no U-turn possibly in that. I just want to have that level of confidence. I think it's this magnificent moment. The video you're talking about with the Chelsea fans in the stand is obviously the highlight of the season for so many reasons. And, I mean, the owner being brought onto the pitch afterwards. Like, I wish they did that in American sports, where, like, Tom Brady would be like, do we bring our owner out? Is our owner a dickhead or is he not? Nah, he's all right. Come on out. And they allowed them to do that in American sports. That's essentially what happened on Saturday. Leicester were like, our owner is good. Everybody else watching this, particularly you, the sneaky six, all of your owners are bad. So let's show off our shiny owner, who's great and way better than your owner. I just loved that moment. I thought it was class. And all of a sudden, like these things that we would sneer at in the past about, I don't know, the crowd and the fans and the passion that's attached to British football. I think we've all realised that actually they're really, really, really important. It was brilliant. But Chelsea, though, not so brilliant. They are in the bad this week. You mentioned the hurling. Let's get on to that. It's in the orange this week because there were a couple of great moments, as there is in every hurling weekend. Galway were particularly good. We're going to have Cyril Farrell with us a little bit later on. But this is like that VAR Monday. Do you remember when there was like a million penalties given in the Premier League and it was like Brexit debate all over again when VAR that Monday was just international news. Everybody was debating it. This is that Monday for hurling. As I say, the front of the Examiner, who stole our game, is probably a question that sums up the mood of a lot of managers. John Kiely in particular, Jura, desperately unhappy, especially when it comes to some of the Galway simulation, which I'd imagine won't go down well with Galway hurling fans.
Like we talked at length several times in the build-up to this about if you absolutely imbue every free within a certain area with the potential for there to be a penalty, then players are going to take advantage of that opportunity. And at the slightest hint of contact, they're going to go down to make sure the referee understands that there was contact and this foul was cynical. And so therefore it stopped a goal-scoring opportunity. It is in every sport. It is literally, it's the picture you paint for the referee is how rugby talk about it. And generally it's like, oh, you've got to paint a good picture. But equally, there are those people who are trying to make sure that you're painting a bad picture, the dark arts, they call it. In football, it's diving. And was the intended consequence that you would introduce the art of the dive into hurling and football? I think it probably wasn't. And so therefore, this is definitely one of those, the cane toads have been released into the Australian society. Let's see what happens. Well, they're going to grow fat and bulbous and take over. That's what happened. Like, we've all seen the Simpsons episode, right? I don't know. I just feel, I feel two things about this. One, the hurling managers have notoriously been the most conservative and anti-change of any of the groups in history in Ireland. And let's face it, we're a super conservative country. So that's saying something. I don't think they've ever seen a real change that they liked. So you've got to bear that in mind. And then the other thing is that they might be right about this. There's a possibility that there's some hybrid version where you do need to punish the cynical fouling that we saw, and you also need to allow the game to get like to be close to the perfection that it was. So, what's the answer, Owen?
Yeah, I know it's that. Like, we might try and tease this out with Cyril Farrell later. We will try and tease it out later on, but whether or not we're going to arrive at an answer remains to be seen. I see Anthony Daly in the Examiner is talking about how many football tenets have become key cornerstones of hurling coaching. So he's firmly blaming blaming this on football coaches and what they've brought to hurling recently, because we can't all blame this on referees. Like, we can to a certain degree in terms of the recent changes over the last couple of weeks, for example, but hurling hasn't exactly been moving in a great direction over the last couple of years. Of course, it's absolutely blasphemous to suggest that such a thing might actually be the case, but like in many ways,
what do you mean?
In many ways, hurling has now just turned into a situation where are you strong enough to puck the ball a long distance? And like, I mean, Cork against Tip was a decent game on Saturday night, but like Jason Ford, when he brings it back to level scores after 75 minutes or something like that. He is standing inside his own 65 and he's still got about 20 yards to spare. Neil McManus, when he launches that one from inside Antrim's half against Clare last week, an amazing little turn, and then pucks the ball over from deep inside his own 65, again with another 20, 30 yards to spare. It's like, wow, good job, you can puck the ball 100 yards. Well done, you. But that's what everybody can do now. Everybody can score from deep within their own half. That should be, just scoring from within your own half should be a rare, weird thing. Now it's becoming the norm in hurling. It is the norm. Every game you see an inside your own half score regularly.
Yeah, but that, so all of a sudden then, defences are going to have to start taking account of the player inside their own 45 who is able to score from there. And I think that's going to bring...
What about the freeze?
Like the game has gone through an evolution, right? I mean, when...
You can't foul somebody in the opposition half.
For example, well then don't. Don't foul somebody inside the opposition half. That's actually a really good thing. If you can't now foul somebody without the fear of giving away a score, then that actually means that you're going to see a much cleaner, crisper, more silky...
Cleaner or unphysical?
Hurling match. What?
Cleaner or non-physical? I would say it's moving towards the latter.
I don't think so, Owen. I think that you absolutely still see good physical challenges and good competition for the ball because the referees aren't going to blow up for shoulders. Like Kevin Durant from downtown in Game 3 against the Cleveland Cavaliers just before halftime. Close to the halfway line. You're not complaining about the fact that Kevin Durant and loads of people can score threes. You're like, wow. That's
threes
amazing.
Are different.
What an amazing bit of skill.
Threes are different. Threes are very different to scoring within your own. If Steph Curry scores from the halfway line, you're like, that is amazing. The thing is, Steph Curry will not have an uncontested shot.
To a different standard.
But he will not have an uncontested shot from within his own half. That's my problem. It's almost with the free taking. But the McManus example was actually a terrible example because that's from play. And that was actually this really brilliant moment where he ditches his defender and leaves him eating dust, and then he scores within his own half.
More and more of that. I think the point about the freeze is actually on the rule changes and just the lack of the advantage rule that's going to happen. I think that they can sort that out. But I actually think that hurling's going in a really good direction where you can rack up these scores, and where if you're a team who has good shooters, you can position them anywhere from the half-back line forward and try and create a game plan around them. And I think that over the next couple of years we're going to see hopefully some of those teams who have been coming from the lower divisions make that leap, because you can work on that skill and you can rack up 22, 24 points and then hope that you're inside forwards because the rules are going to get some freedom to score goals. Like I don't think, but it's interesting that you think that, and I think there's a view out there that that hurling's going in a kind of tragic direction.
I don't have many policies in sport, but one of them is it should be hard to score from your own half. But if you give away a free anywhere near the opposition 65, you're conceding. If your opposition free taker is worth his salt in intercounty hurling, you are conceding from that position. And I don't know, I think that just cheapens the whole thing. It cheapens the really amazing things we see every single week in intercounty hurling.
Why should you be allowed to foul with impunity, though? Why should halfbacks...
That's not what I'm suggesting at all. Sometimes fouls are accidental. Sometimes fouls are genuinely accidental. Sometimes there's a crap referee. Sometimes and they do not warrant a score opportunity being given. Fair enough if that happens in the opposition half, because that's the scoring zone. But all of a sudden, fouling anywhere on the hurling pitch is becoming a scoring opportunity for the opponents. And I'm not on board for that. There's a couple of things we want to get to in the good. There are some good things. We've got like a minute. So we've got all the negatives out of the way, which is good. Football is the winner, as you can see there in the green. I think we've covered this in fairness. The FA Cup final on Saturday night, just this magnificent television experience. And then at number one here in the good is the contenders. We've had plenty of reaction in on what these should be. We've got David saying David Clifford is in the green, small touch of a goat about him. We've got M. Martin saying, all good and well, Ger, with Kerry, but how poor are Galway? From a Galway man, I wouldn't look too much into Kerry's performance, as Galway were shocking. So are we doing that? Are we reading a lot into Kerry's performance, or are we saying challenge game this morning?
No, we're not. We're saying Kerry are absolutely sensational. Will on YouTube says, do not let Sheehan play down this Kerry win. Last year, Galway were considered one of the potential Champo winners, and Kerry disemboweled them, Japanese style. Build the Kerry hype. Hype train is leaving the station today. Get on board. It carries all Ireland to lose.
They've carved themselves out as a contender. I think it's fair to say after the weekend, like, no question about it. Nobody's going to try and play that down.
Greatest footballer of all time, in the peak of his powers.
No question about that. I'm being told to read the comments. We don't have time for analysis on that right now, but we will get Anthony Moyles' take on that a little bit later on. James McCullough says Munster should be in the red for performance rankings. To lose at home to Connacht when they're the only team going full throttle for this pointless trophy is shocking. We've got Niall McCann saying get Carlo Ancelotti into the red. Yassine says Alisson for scoring that winner, obviously, and Schmeichel for two world-class saves. A good weekend to be a goalkeeper. As I say, David is suggesting David Clifford in the green. Oisín says get Kieran Donaghy in the green. Armagh forwards were very dangerous. It was a great performance from Armagh in patches yesterday. And Thomas Kane says Donegal should be in the green, beating Tyrone away in a high-scoring game. So we should also give a mention to Rashida Adeleke, who broke Phil Healy's 200-metre Irish record on Saturday night. She ran 22.96 in Texas, where she's in college. She's now on the brink of qualifying for the Olympics, and also the Irish rowers doing Irish rowing things. Olympic record being broken as six boats qualify for Tokyo. Six boats. For the sake of Irish rowing everywhere, we really hope that the Tokyo Olympics goes ahead. Later this morning on OTBAM, we're going to pick a winner for Monday's Gillette Starter Pack. You still have time to send us in your suggestions. You can tweet us at Off The Ball. You can comment on our Instagram story or WhatsApp us at 0879 180 180. That is it for the performance rankings.
OTBAM's performance rankings with Gillette. That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.